The Buck Sexton Show.
The latest craziness in the Middle East. We've got the Iran negotiations, but also a lot of fighting and bloodshed on the ground, including Iran and Shia militia capture of Tikrit, at least most of Tikrit, from Islamic State militants. Well, to help us work through this now, back by popular demand of some Team Buck requests here, we have Michael Weiss. He's the author of ISIS, Inside the Army of Terror, which I just read today, the New York Times says, I believe, is the most detailed and serious account of ISIS yet. Michael, thank you so much for calling in.
Sure. Thanks for having me on again.
All right. So what do you think about happenings in let's start with Tikrit, then we'll sort of expand it out. What do you think about these Shia militias being used as the mullah's army on the ground, taking back from the Islamic State that which they had previously conquered?
Yeah, I think you and I agree about this. This is a disaster in the long term. Short term, it's nice to see ISIS being defeated. But these militia groups, as I wrote in Foreign Policy with Mike Pregent, are guilty of ISIS-like atrocities. They have beheaded people. They have burnt down entire villages surrounding the town of Amirli, which was retaken last October. They're actually going around rounding up their fellow Shia and torturing them because they believe that they might actually be Sunnis who are collaborating with ISIS. So, you know, the question is the cure as bad, or if maybe not worse than the disease, but you know, going to plunge Iraq into another period of sectarian civil conflict? I think the answer is yes. A lot of Sunnis in Iraq are, you know, not sympathetic to ISIS or their ideology. I mean, there's actually a quite powerful, albeit, muted and under-reported resistance effort inside Mosul. The problem is, who are they going to rise up, on whose behalf will they be rising up against ISIS? They're not going to do it on behalf of Tehran. And that's sort of how we see it in Iraq today. So the recent operation in Tikrit, you know, the militias essentially waged this campaign a month ago without a buyer leave from Washington or consultations with CENTCOM. Then the campaign stalled. And just to put this in perspective, we're talking about, I've seen estimates anywhere from 24 to 30,000 pro-government forces, of which 20,000, you know, were said to be militiamen. These guys were fighting against 400 to 750 ISIS militants who held their ground for 3 weeks. The campaign stalled. Then Baghdad realized, you know, it was sort of lost in its own sort of folly of a military effort. So it requested airstrikes. U.S. airstrikes came in, and the U.S. said, well, we don't want the militias to lead this charge anymore. So make sure that there are Iraqi federal police and Iraqi security forces that are, you know, spearheading the effort. What I see now is essentially a very sophisticated propaganda effort to paint this as the state that is doing it. It's not. It's Hashd al-Shaabi. It's still the militia groups. They never really left. They temporarily boycotted the operation because of U.S. involvement, but they didn't withdraw from the battlefield. They just kind of waited in to see what would happen. But
what do you think? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, the people who are essentially in control of the militia consortium known as the Popular Mobilization Forces, Hadi al-Amri, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, both of them are Iranian spies. Both of them answered to Qasem Soleimani. So this is really very much an Iranian victory.
That's a perfect transition. Michael, I wanted to ask, what do you think Soleimani's, what's his strategy here from, you know, at this point on? Where is he trying to take this? I mean, where do you see Iranian influence going at this point? I don't think they can count on Shia militia to try to take Mosul, for example, but what do you think the Iranians are hoping they can get out of all this?
Well, they're actually in a tough spot. You know, they're depicting this as sort of their grand triumph, their takeover of Iraq, their takeover of Yemen and the rest of it. But in actuality, the Quds force and their clients or proxies all throughout the Middle East have been suffering some pretty tactical losses. Soleimani's effort to push back against Syrian rebels in southern Syria failed. And, you know, for that campaign, he brought in Afghan Shia and, you know, Hezbollah. Hezbollah and the IRGC are not doing so well in Syria at the moment. And, you know, obviously Assad's forces in Idlib just lost the city, mostly to Jabhat al-Nusra, but other Islamist groups as well. In Iraq, look, they've bitten off more than they can chew. You're quite right. They're not going to be able to take Mosul. Mosul is a city of 1 to 2 million people, the second most populous city in Iraq. It's hard to say how many are still left because there's a huge refugee exodus, or there was, beginning in last June when ISIS blew in. And also, Soleimani is kind of walking this knife edge, isn't he, of a kind of tacit de facto alliance with the United States, but at the same time, you know, fulminations and you know, no let up in the hatred for great Satan. So can Iran flush out ISIS without America's help? No. Can Iran flush out ISIS with America's help? I don't think they can. Again, you need Sunnis to fight Sunni jihadis. And so that, you know, you've seen some token numbers of Sunni tribesmen that are joining up with these militias. But what you don't see is anything approaching a groundswell, nothing like the awakening from the 2006 to 2008.
Right. I think that the Islamic State learned from the previous problems facing al-Qaeda in Iraq. I know you and I have talked this before, and they recognize don't even leave anyone in a position to perhaps rise up against you, even at the slightest inclination or the slightest concern. They can execute people, and that's what they've been doing in some of the tribal areas. But I want to ask you for your, you know, ISIS was, and I know when I was bumping into you at CNN with some frequency, ISIS was just the news story day in and day out. Everyone's talking about it. It has faded away for a variety of reasons from as a news story, but by no means as an organization. So I just wanted to give you the floor here to bring us up to speed on where are they gaining, where are they losing? I mean, what's the sort of ISIS scorecard as of today? Because people haven't really heard that much about it in recent weeks.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're losing tactical ground in Iraq. Have they lost strategically in Iraq? Well, no. If you look at the current lay of the land, just any map, the Institute for the Study of War has a weekly Iraq update, and they put out some very good sort of optics on the battlefield. They're still in control of about one-third of the country. So the Kurds have moved in. They've creeped over the Green Line and taken Kirkuk, and you know they're also terrified of the Shia militias because that's the next impending conflict. It's going to be Iran versus the Kurds, and you know the loss of Tikrit is a symbolic victory for Iraq and Iran. But does that mean they're going to you know hit Mosul anytime soon? No, I think that campaign is months, if not even longer, away. In Syria, and they've actually been making gains. There's this news out today. I haven't really looked into it too deeply because I've been doing other things, but that ISIS is now in Yarmouk, the Palestinian refugee camp in Damascus. That is terrifying, not just because it means that a lot of Palestinian refugees are going to suffer, but that is right into the heart of the capital there. And it's true that ISIS has had a presence in Damascus, although it hasn't been a very robust or numerically strong one, but that may change. They are also in Hama. They're still in very much the suburbs of Aleppo, Deir Zor, Hasaka. They've taken ground. So they were pushed out of Kobani and many of the outlying villages, mostly by the YPG Kurdish militias. But they're still entrenched. In Syria, they're gaining ground. Look, and here's what sort of worries me in the long term. Metaphorically speaking, with the stroke of a pen, they gained 20,000 square miles of terrain in West Africa when Boko Haram pledged allegiance to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, and he accepted. They are spreading like a cancer throughout the region. Obviously, they've now set up shop in Yemen. We've seen with the beheading of the Egyptian cops in Libya, they have a presence there. They're very good at recruiting away from al-Qaeda franchises, jihadis who feel like, you know, Zawahiri's concern is sort of a busted flush at this point. He's a has-been and a sellout. Let's cast our lot with the going jihadi movement. So, you know, I don't see, I mean, if you're asking me, are we winning? Is ISIS losing? I think the answer is no, they're not losing, but they have suffered military defeats, as you would expect them to do when they go up against the United States. But, you know, again, I've always said, you know, the U.S. is engaged in this kind of information warfare against ISIS, how to push back against their propaganda. The problem is U.S. foreign policy is the greatest asset to ISIS's propaganda. Because this goes back a decade to Zarqawi. What was his main conceit? It was this crusader Jewish Rafida conspiracy, the United States and Iran, dispossessing, murdering, ethnically cleansing the Sunnis. Well, at the time, that sounded a little hysterical and conspiratorial. Today, it sounds less so to Sunnis because, again, they do see U.S.
Because we're Iran's Air Force in Tikrit, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, this is – you are seeing now, I think, a collective nervous breakdown on the part of – Sunni Muslim countries in the region or Sunni-led countries in the region. This is why the Gulf states are chewing the carpet in paroxysms of anxiety in this area about this Iran deal, because they see it, and even though the Obama administration denies it, they see this as not about a nuclear deal with Iran. They see this as about rapprochement with the Islamic Republic in an effort maybe to replace the relationship we have with Saudi Arabia, it's with one with Iran.
Right. It seems pretty clear that there's no expectation that there'll be a change in Iranian behavior as a result of a nuclear deal, because any change in behavior is not part of the negotiation.
This is sort of Alice in Wonderland thinking, you know. I mean, taking the anti-Americanism out of Khomeinism leaves nothing of Khomeinism left, you know. So you can't have the Islamic Republic as it currently exists without the anti-American. And we're seeing this now. There's a very good piece I just read in the New York Times about, hey, everyone thought we were inches away from a deal over the nuclear stuff. And in fact, they're putting down these new, you know, kind of intransigent lines and conditions. And, you know, there's this deep abiding suspicion of the United States, and the Supreme Leader does not want to budge. Well, exactly, because that's the system. That is the nature of the regime. And, you know,
right. Well, I think we get a sense of that when they're yelling, literally yelling death to America the same day publicly. Yeah. And they're saying death to America as John Kerry's coming out saying we're very close to a deal.
Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, I think, you know, America has suffered from, in the post 9/11 period, not just a kind of fetish of counterterrorism. And counterterrorism is not a field anymore. It's more like an industry. And with many industries, you know, you get too close to your subject, and there's a lot of financial gain to be made from, you know, resorting to drones and JSOC raids and leaving out the politics, right? Politics is all, especially in the Middle East. So people who go around saying, well, why do we care? Iran doesn't threaten us, and Shia militias don't threaten us. First of all, Shia militias do threaten us. They have said they want to shoot down U.S. warplanes. They accuse the United States of having invented ISIS and now backing it militarily and financially. So this is not a concern to be taken lightly. Qatif Hezbollah, or the Hezbollah Brigade in Iraq, they are a U.S.-designated terrorist organization, the only Shia militia to be so. And they have said, we would love to nothing more than to take down an American cargo plane. So what happens if they do that? You know, it doesn't mean they have to strike in the American homeland.
Right. Well, these same militias, and I've been telling everyone on the show this for weeks now, these same militias went out of their way to explicitly target U.S. personnel to kill them with EFPs so that it would be harder for us to put down the sectarian civil war happening in Iraq. And this was this was now 2007, 2008.
And this is, I think this is the sort of fatuousness of America's line that we have a common interest with Iran in Iraq. We do not. They want to defeat the Islamic State, but replace it with their Islamic state, or their you know, export the Islamic revolution. America wants, in theory, a democratic, non-sectarian, you know, country with its own sovereignty. Iran wants nothing of the kind. And yes, you're quite right. 20% of U.S. casualties during the occupation and war were sustained through essentially a dirty war conducted by Iran and its proxies on the ground. There's a famous, in the Dexter Filkins piece on Qasem Soleimani, which is one of the best pieces of journalism I've read. There's a line there about, I think it was Jalal Talabani, the Kurdish leader who showed David Petraeus text messages alleging that it was from Soleimani, saying this was during the Second Lebanese War in 2006. And Soleimani told the U.S. commander of forces in Iraq, I hope you're enjoying a little vacation I've been giving you and your boys. I've been tied up in Beirut for the last few weeks. I mean, this is an evil man. This is a man who wants to kill Americans. This is a man who wants to hurt the United States and its interests. And we're treating him as though he's the Patton or the Eisenhower of this campaign. I mean, there's been – Iranian state media love this. There have been rumors – probably bogus,
right?
But it just gives you a sense
and if we take a slightly longer view, Michael, it seems pretty clear to me that given how, you know, people were talking about Iranian influence in Iraq, and it was sort of en vogue even in 2008 and 2009. Mm-hmm. People say, oh, well, we've handed Iran to Iraq, or rather Iraq to Iran. Well, if you thought that was true then, you must really think it's true now. I think it's really we've crossed the point of no return, because there's no way that you're going to be able to settle the sectarianism when you have the government actively using Shia militias as essentially auxiliary forces at the direction of Iran, with, as you say, Qasem Soleimani running around acting like he's the Iraqi equivalent of Rommel or whoever.
Right, exactly. And, you know, look, unfortunately, the people that are running U.S. policy both in and out of Iraq are the ones who are saying, oh, you know, Maliki, he's our guy. He's not an Iranian stooge. We can work with him. I mean, Joe Biden should be remembered for many things, but two quotes in particular. Number one, he said, I'll bet my vice presidency that Maliki signs the status of forces agreement. Well, you notice he's still vice president and we have no sofa. Number two, when Maliki essentially stole the Iraqi election in 2010, and the U.S. had to make a decision of which horse they were going to back, Alawi, who was the interim prime minister, secular Shia but liked by many Sunnis, or Maliki, they went with Maliki. And Joe Biden is even on record, this is in The Endgame, which is the best history book of the Iraq War, saying Maliki hates the goddamn Sunnis. Well, then why did the United States back him? Because that is what has led to this crisis. That is how ISIS gained purchase in Iraq, or how it came back into power.
In moments of frustration, Michael, in moments of absolute frustration, I remember hearing people in the government say, you know, maybe when dealing with AQI and the Sunni insurgency, maybe we should just back the Shia. Maybe this is a fool's errand. They didn't mean it, but people would sort of just would let that go. That's actually what's happening right now. That is the de facto policy on the ground in Iraq.
There's no getting around the fact that Iraq is a Shia majority country. But here's the thing: most Iraqi Shias do not want to be in a state of vassalage to Iran. You know, they want their independence. And you know, a lot of them, even those who back the militias and now the IRGC, they say quite rightly, you know, America was not here for us. Iran came and rescued us from the soup. America was not here. They abandoned this country. They withdrew militarily. You know, they kept Maliki going. So this is what you get. And I have to be honest with you, I'm somewhat sympathetic to that line of argument, because it is true. We created this mess. And then when it looked like it was sort of getting a little bit better, actually a lot better, if you look at the metrics, I mean, kinetic activities throughout the country were down precipitously after both the awakening and then the surge. And by 2010, the AQI leadership was decimated. But the reason that they came back with a bullet is because the Sunnis felt completely politically disenfranchised and marginalized.
Right. The political project failed. Michael, I've actually, the machine's going to cut me off, but ISIS Inside the Army of Terror is his book. Michael Weiss is the author. Michael, thank you so much for calling in. Great as always. Talk to you again soon.